Good afternoon and welcome to Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, September 29th, 2020. This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. Ahead on our show, trail construction in northwest Arkansas continues. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek takes us to Centennial Park to introduce us to new trails there. That's in our second half hour. And in just a few minutes, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda gives us details about a campaign to make sure children receive their necessary immunizations during a year when staying healthy is more important than ever. After our show on Here and Now from NPR, a preview of Tuesday night's presidential debate. And police in Texas have been using hypnosis to solve crime since the 1980s, but how accurate is this technique? A deeper look on Here and Now, beginning at 1 this afternoon, right after Ozarks at Large. For the fifth time in 7 days, Arkansas's new cases of confirmed and probable cases of COVID-19 above 800. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 807 new cases for the most recent 24-hour testing period. The ADH is also adding 21 deaths to the state's fatality total. There have now been 1,329 confirmed and probable deaths because of the virus in the state. Hospitals in northwest Arkansas report 44 patients in COVID-19 units today. That's a decrease of 2 patients during the last 24 hours. Yesterday, there were 42 new cases reported in Washington County. Since the pandemic began, Washington and Benton counties have accounted for about 20% of the state's total cases. The Atkins School District is grieving the loss of Superintendent Jody Jenkins due to the virus. The school district announced his death on social media this morning. He returned to his alma mater as superintendent in 2019. Governor Asa Hutchinson is scheduled to discuss the latest COVID-19 news today at 1:30 in his weekly press briefing. KUAF will carry that briefing live. Internationally, the virus has now killed more than 1 million people. Talk Business and Politics reports the Fort Smith School District will open a wellness clinic at Darby Junior High School. Superintendent Doug Brubaker says a $500,000 grant from a state coalition of several groups for physical and mental health education, making that grant. The announcement came during the annual public report at the district school board's regular meeting. Brubaker also says a survey begins today to accelerate the renaming of Albert Pike Elementary School. Last month, the school board voted unanimously to rename the school and remove Pike's name. Pike joined white supremacist efforts and wrote white supremacist material before and after the Civil War. Arkansas PBS will include voices from around the state discussing race and social justice Thursday night on a special broadcast titled Healing the Divide, a New Generation of Activists. Host Dr. Malcolm Glover, CEO of Glover Global Consulting, and guests will discuss topics involving race, including activism and community interactions. The special airs Thursday night beginning at 7 on Arkansas PBS. This is Ozarks at Large. While the world waits for the arrival of a coronavirus vaccine, there are vaccines available right now to help prevent other communicable diseases. A campaign encouraging families to not let the pandemic delay receiving these vaccines is now underway. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The Our Kids First health insurance program has kicked off the Don't Wait, Vaccinate campaign to encourage parents not to delay getting their child's routine vaccinations. Arkansas has seen a decline in childhood vaccinations compared to last year. According to the Arkansas Department of Health, Arkansas children from birth to age 18 received 75,310 fewer vaccinations between January and the end of July 2020 than they did between January and the end of July 2019. Marcy Manley, Deputy Chief of Communications for the Arkansas Department of Human Services, says health officials are attributing the decline to the pandemic.
Largely people, wanting to limit contact going outside. They may be trying to social distance. We had a number of people that, we know they canceled appointments or, there was a time where doctor's offices were closed except for emergent things.
However, over the past few months, pediatricians have made modifications to keep patients safe.
Pediatricians have been able to develop plans of say, segregating, you know, well days versus sick days, or even areas of their practice, so that kids can come in and get well child checkups, get their vaccinations and immunizations, and do those things because they know that they're really important.
Manley says even during a pandemic, the need for immunizations doesn't stop.
Flu season is almost on the way, but then aside from that, immunizations protect not only the children who get them, but the larger community from some illnesses that sometimes we think of as being like long gone and done with, but that we have seen a resurgence in outbreaks, right? Measles, mumps. And we don't want to see kids getting vaccine preventable illnesses on top of a pandemic and then on top of flu season as well. That's really concerning.
For parents concerned about cost, Our Kids First covers childhood vaccines, including the flu vaccine, at no cost to eligible families.
We have Our Kids A and Our Kids B. The differences are income eligibility levels. Our Kids B, higher income levels, you may have a copay. Our Kids A, different income requirements, but no copays. But essentially, Our Kids serves as the children's health insurance program. You may have heard of CHIP. Through Medicaid. And so that coverage comes through, we administer Medicaid here in Arkansas, and Our Kids is the program specifically directed to children's coverage for general well child checkups, immunizations, and preventative care.
According to DHS, nearly 436,000 children are currently covered under Our Kids. As part of this campaign, Our Kids First and the Arkansas Department of Human Services are launching paid print and social media advertisements.
We're also putting together sort of outreach packets to school nurses and childcare facilities, particularly in counties and in areas of the state that maybe have had historically lower immunization rates. And so we'll be issuing those throughout October and November as well, because we know that those are people that are trusted resources of information for the families that they serve. And they also have connections to families and may know what their circumstances are, or that, you know, they'll have some resources available should they be asked as a source of information.
One of the counties DHS is targeting in Northwest Arkansas is Washington County, which had a 61.4% vaccination rate in 2019 for children ages 19 to 35 months.
Really, immunizations don't just protect your child, they protect the rest of the community. There are some children and even adults, right, that have health conditions where they can't be immunized. They are at risk. And so by everyone else getting their immunizations, following that recommended schedule from the CDC, you're not just protecting your own child by building their immunity, you're protecting your neighbors who maybe don't have that option.
More information about immunizations is available at the Arkansas Department of Health's website, healthy.arkansas.gov. Families interested in learning more about Our Kids eligibility requirements and how to apply can visit Our Kids, that's arkidsfirst.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And a programming reminder, the first debate between President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden will take place tonight at 8 o'clock and will be broadcast live on 91.3 KUAF. The debate is just one of the topics covered this week by Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. But there's more to talk about. A race for the state legislature in South Arkansas, suggesting Arkansas politics may be following a national trend, and the New York Times reporting on the president's taxes. Roby and John began their conversation, recorded yesterday, with the tax matters. New York Times reporting shows the president did not pay taxes in certain years. John Brummett says it's interesting reporting, but
I don't think it makes that much difference. I think his base is pleased that he's smart enough not to pay taxes. And that just shows that he's, plus they don't believe in taxes for the government anyway, because the government just gives money to poor people. So I don't think it changes really the percentages in the polls all that much. But I just like revelatory things that fit my narrative of Trump. And this does. Basically, the Times, if I might, there's a whole lot of detail, it's marvelous reporting, more than most people will want to wade through. But if I might give a microcosm of one section of it, most of the actual money he made the few years before he became president was for being a celebrity on TV. A shallow celebrity doing a faux reality show. So that's what real money he got, cash. It was from being on TV and having a show where he said, "You're fired," basically. He took that money, and what other money he could, I would say beg, borrow still, but let's say borrow. And he put it into building things which are shrines to himself, to his built in his megalomaniacal image, a golf course, a golf resort, a hotel. And they all lost so much money that he was able to lose, to use those losses to offset the real money he had made being a banal celebrity on TV saying, "You're fired." So that's how, that's his business model. We got his man in Arkansas, Bud Cummins, saying today, "This is just the U.S. tax code. It's just legal." I suspect maybe it is, although there's so much detail, you got to wonder, did he take too much money on some of these write-offs, these donations? And the Times also reports that the audit is pending, has been long underway, and he has a potential big liability coming. So all of that is, but the central story is one I already knew, but it's just classic here. Money is, what money he actually has is celebrity. His business ventures are self shrines that lose money. And the government and his creditors are paying the salaries of all of his employees. That's what we've got. Like it or not, that's what we've got.
I think there's two big takeaways for me beyond what you've talked about there. One is the fact that the New York Times alluded to, they have more stories coming on this. This has the potential, to me, to be the drip, drip, drip of the email scandal that Hillary Clinton waded through in 2016, where every day you were afraid to touch the newspaper because you didn't know what was going to be coming out next. I think the other thing is that we found out that somewhere between $300 to a little over $400 million of debt that the president has is coming due in the very near future. And that, to me, speaks to the whole issue of, is he compromised somehow, which we've long suspected that he was, and has that played into foreign policy somehow? So could the presidential debate on Tuesday night make a difference to someone?
I think it could. I think it could. If I wasn't paid to watch it, I would not watch it.
Why not?
Because Donald Trump makes me ill and Joe Biden makes me nervous. And it's all going to be there on display. Mm-hmm. Trump being his blustery self and attacking, and he's going to be in a mood to counterattack with Lord knows what based on what the New York Times has done. They're already saying today that this has to do with Hunter Biden somehow. Hunter Biden has got some money that he got from somebody in Russia. So we're going to hear, and then Joe is a very serious, fervent family man. How's he going to react with his son being under attack?
His aides are worried that he's going to blow a gasket.
And then he also, to be candid, and this was true even when Joe was younger, he has a tendency to blab a little bit, to get going and not go anywhere, or to get going and say something that's not. So, like you said, what was said the other day? We had 200 million people die of coronavirus, you know, in the United States. No, 200,000. It's a little difference. Well, then Obama once said he'd been to all 57 states, so those kind of mistakes happen. But
we could pick some Trump verbal gaffes if we wanted to as well.
I think I fear an octogenarian, a near octogenarian cage fight. And can it make any difference? I think, oddly, we've got this incumbent president who has so many issues. We have a new revelations about his taxes, which are a major story. But I think tomorrow, the onus is all on Joe Biden. Can you get through it competently? You're ahead in the polls. So somehow, tomorrow night, I don't think it'll be about Trump. We know we're going to get blustery, explosive, misstated performance from Trump. How's Joe going to handle? I'm afraid that's the storyline.
Well, tomorrow. The litmus test is that the Trump campaign has set this bar of expectation for Biden that he can't string two sentences together, that he's on some sort of performance-enhancing drugs
for a debate.
And I think that if he strings together some cohesive statements, he allays those concerns with the majority of Americans who just want to see with their own eyes and ears.
What you just said again.
What you're talking about.
What I just said. It's about Joe Biden. You just handicapped it. If Joe does well, it'll really be great. The bar is low for Joe, set by Trump. So if Joe does okay, If Joe is competent, good. I'm just saying the story is Joe Biden. It's not Donald Trump. Remarkably, because the campaign so far has been, the polls reflect, it's Trump versus Trump with Joe in the default position. And Joe has to show I'm worthy of the default position.
We are seeing in a state Senate race down in South Arkansas some attacks on incumbent State Senator Bruce Malik. We saw, he's a Democrat,
right?
We saw Republican Senate leader Jim Hendren come to his defense. How unusual is that?
I would, as I say in tomorrow's column, if we still ran presses, we should probably stop them. But then I qualify to say we should stop the presses if we still ran them, on the general point that a Republican is criticizing his party for attacks in a campaign on a Democrat. But then I say, no, I'll keep him running because it's Hendren, and Hendren is different. Jim Hendren has been open, saying that he is thinking of, that he is disdainful of politics as usual, that governing, as he began to undertake a special interest in as he tried to help Uncle Asa run the state, requires bipartisanship and working together. And he is now, and he is disdainful of a lot of the modern rhetoric, so that it's Hendren doing it is not a stop the presses guy. It's kind of to be expected. There are a couple of things here. I'll just make the point. Basically, this is what I fear happening, largely through the work of this Gilmore group locally in Little Rock doing Republican advertising. The partisan dysfunction of Washington is being introduced to Arkansas. We've been sort of exempt.
I don't know if it's been introduced. We've seen some pretty rough ads over the years. Okay. I mean, I can go back the last decade and pull quite a few.
Reintroduced. Intensified, okay. If I might. But basically, we've had governors like Beebe and Asa Hutchinson during this right-wing revolt who have managed to keep the government running by being sort of in the center or center right and pragmatic and avoiding and marginalizing those sorts of things. And we've had a Democratic minority in the state legislature that would go along with needed policy that Asa and Hendren and responsible Republicans would propose because it was the right thing to do, rather than doing what they might do in Washington, which is use their ability to block appropriations and blow everything up. That's what would happen in Washington. Hasn't happened here. So in this campaign, we've got the Republican, this is what upsets Hendren, we've got the Republican Party and Republican ad agency people attacking a Democratic senator, a conservative Democratic senator in South Arkansas, for voting for things that the Republican leadership, that Asa Hutchinson and the Republican leadership of the legislature needed him to vote for to get them passed because they were responsible things to do. Converting some element of our retail taxation to internet sales, for example.
Yep.
Perfectly practical, necessary things. We're going to wind up, like Washington, I fear, because we're going to beat any Democrat who works with a Republican, and maybe vice versa, but that's the dynamic now. We're going to wind up simply with no one, whatever Democrats are left in the legislature, will be unwilling to work with Republicans on responsible policy because they're going to get attacked for it in mailers and directed social media.
Well, you could also have Republicans not willing to work with Republicans.
I just said it could go both ways, but right now the dynamic is that the Republicans need to govern. And the Democrats could, if they can get 9 senators and 26 House members, which is iffy, they could block nearly every appropriation.
They could.
And if they're going to just get demonized, I mean, this idea that Bruce Malik is in bed with Cortez and Sanders and Bernie Sanders and Cortez and Kamala Harris, you know. Give me a break. There used to be rural conservative to centrist Democrats who could survive in this state. They're nearly extinct now, and the Republicans now appear interested in let's just get rid of all of them.
Yeah,
particularly
down in South Arkansas.
Right.
There's some other Southeast Arkansas races that are fitting a similar mold.
Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics, and John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. They discuss political matters and more most Tuesdays on Ozarks at Large. You can hear more from this conversation, including John Brumbitt's take on the latest in the Arkansas 2nd Congressional District race and the first Razorback football game of the season, at talkbusiness.net. And you can read John Brumbitt's columns, including the one he mentioned in this conversation, at arkansasonline.com.
The 25th annual BGO Greening of the Garden Gala is Thursday, October 1st at 6 p.m. A limited number of tickets are available. This socially distanced evening includes live music, dinner, and drinks in the garden. Virtual tickets are available for those who would rather support the garden from home and includes meal delivery. BGOzarks.org for tickets and more information. KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, presenting Ansel Adams In Our Time, a new traveling exhibition featuring 100 photographs from Adams alongside the work of contemporary photographers. Open now through January 3rd. Tickets and details available at crystalbridges.org.
Still to come on this edition of Ozarks at Large, Greenwood will have a Christmas parade this year, but the pandemic is changing something pretty big, actually. The parade will stay still, and the audience will drive by the floats, and candy will safely be deposited in butterfly nets for children. The first ever Greenwood Reverse Christmas Parade explained ahead. First, a mid-show musical performance provided by the Fayetteville Roots Festival.
Hey there, this is Bernice Hembree with Fayetteville Roots and local band Smokey in the Mirror. Today we have a song by Rebecca Loby. This was recorded in 2018 at the Roots HQ. The title of this song is Ghosts.
Have you ever tried to fall asleep, twisted in a stranger's sheets, unsure where to put your feet, unsure if you belong? Have you ever watched a peaceful chest rise and fall as you got dressed, unsure if you could catch your breath, unsure if you're that strong? Relax, let it go, roll with the flow, you're gonna get over it, be fine in the end. Give up all your ghosts, at least the ones you love the most. They're never holding you as close as you are holding them. Have you ever felt a sinking hook in the soft flesh of a hand you shook, the glancing of a single look you die to see again? Have you ever tried to cross that bridge far away from where you live, unsure where the bottom is or why you need to know? Relax, let it go,
big thank you to KUAF and Ozarks at Large. and Red Barn Studios for making this song possible. To learn more about Rebecca's music, find more at her website, RebeccaLobey.com, and more about Fayetteville Roots Festival at therootsfest.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. The COVID-19 pandemic has slowed down much of the world around us, but local development appears to not have suffered as much of an impact. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek takes us to one of the projects that has stayed on track despite the coronavirus outbreak.
Mountain bikers in the region now have 7 more miles of soft surface trails to ride in Fayetteville. The trails are located at Centennial Park on Millsap Mountain, which is where we meet Brandon Pack, the cycling coordinator for Experience Fayetteville.
We're on the southwest corner of Fayetteville within the city limits. Millsap Mountain, as you mentioned, is a sister mountain to Kessler. So those familiar with this side of town, that Kessler Mountain Regional Park, we're really directly north of that, just across 62. We're 2 exits up from on I-49.
The nearly 230-acre wooded mountain is still under development, but portions are open to the public. So while you might see ongoing construction, PAC encourages people to visit.
This park is unique in the sense that it's being designed really bike forward or bike first, so with bikes in mind. And the development includes 2 purpose-built race courses, one for cyclocross, one for mountain biking, a large diversity of mountain bike trail offerings to mountain bike, hike, trail run, and dog walk.
PAC says a well-designed trail system offers on-property progression, which means riders will find trails with varying levels of difficulty from beginner to expert.
So we'll start with beginner. There's this appropriately named learner's permit. It's accessible from the trailhead. So for beginners and families, it's really that kind of fast, flowy, no technicality, just introduction to riding in the woods is what we'll call it.
A good option for anyone who is just getting into the sport of mountain biking or families with young children. There are also intermediate trails with more challenging terrain, ideal for visitors seeking out new mountain bike adventures.
Rocks and technicality and some jumps and things like that. We even incorporated an old antique pickup truck in the woods that we know is going to be one of those memorable and hopefully Instagrammable moments for visitors to the park.
The park also includes a gravity zone, which PAC says is made up of purpose-built downhill directional trails specifically for bikes.
And there's intermediate and advanced trail offerings, everything from Captain Fantastic, which is this pretty rowdy but intermediate descent off the southern slope of the mountain, to trails like Chunky and Hail Mary that are gonna, I mean, we're talking like Black Diamond. So if you think of like if you go to a ski slope and you think of the ratings there, we have green, we have blue, and then we, even on this mountainside, we have Black Diamond trails that are gonna favor those, you know, advanced riders.
And then there are the 2 race course tracks for cyclocross and cross-country events. PAC says those can be used for local races as well as international ones, starting with the 2022 Cyclocross World Championships.
You know, the pandemic has stalled a lot of things. We know that kind of events have had to change, and the way we looked at events and considered events has changed. Hopefully by 2022, a lot of that is in our rear view.
PAC says this is only the second time these championships have come to the U.S., and thousands from around the world are expected to attend.
Fayetteville literally will be welcoming the world as professional male and female cyclocross racers from around the globe come to Fayetteville to compete in those world championships for what are the coveted UCI rainbow jerseys that we get to award right here.
The race courses also include the park's other memorable feature.
There's this huge set of stairs on top of this mountain now. There's something that's very Stonehenge-esque, and those are being incorporated into those cyclocross and XC mountain bike race courses.
The first section of a trail called the Fayetteville Traverse can also be found at Centennial Park, but PAC says that's just the beginning. Eventually, the trail will go all the way through town.
It's going to knit together Fayetteville's many amenities, our public parks, multiple trail systems, our residents, the University of Arkansas, the hotels, the restaurants, the, you know, a place to grab a beer. We're going to knit all that together with a continuous natural surface route for mountain bikers, hikers, and trail runners.
From Millsap Mountain, the traverse will cross Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard to Kessler Mountain before connecting to existing greenway trails.
We'll be able to incorporate some of the existing paved trail corridor. I imagine you'll start to see some single track pop up along the greenway as part of the traverse.
PAC says the traverse will provide a new way for visitors to experience the community.
It's on par with what we know are other, you know, those recreational destinations in the Northwest Arkansas corridor. What we see in Bentonville, what we see in Bella Vista, the traverse is going to be complementary to that for people coming into the corridor for these destination trips.
Phase one includes the Kessler connection and could be finished as early as the end of this year. Once the entire traverse is complete, PAC says it'll be between 15 to 20 miles long while connecting users to 12 miles of trail at Mount Kessler and another 12 at Millsap Mountain once Centennial Park is done. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
During last week's on-air fundraiser at 91.3 KUAF. Of course, the entire month of September is a fundraising month for us, meaning that if you didn't get to us last week, you can still contribute and be counted in this month-long fundraiser. You can do that right now at supportkuaf.com. And again, to everyone who did contribute, thank you very much.
Arkansas Community Foundation delivers county-by-county data on key community indicators at aspirearkansas.org. Better data means better decisions. Smart giving to improve communities. AspireArkansas.org for more. The Museum of Native American History presents the 2020 Native American Celebration. Four Directions, One Earth, Mission United. October 1st through the 3rd. This virtual event features Commander John Harrington, the first Native American astronaut, along with other indigenous leaders, creating a family-friendly weekend discussing the planet, dreaming, leadership, and more. monah.us for details. Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. A $750,000 planning and development grant from the Federal Health Resources and Services Administration is enabling the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Northwest to develop a rural training track for medical school residents. Ronald Brimberry, a family physician and associate professor of UAMS Northwest's Family Medicine Residency Program, will direct the rural training track.
There are a number of our medical students that come to train in Arkansas, as well as from other medical colleges and osteopathic colleges around the country, who already have a specific interest in returning to rural communities to practice. And it's often identified at the time when the medical students come to interview for the residency program.
With the grant funding, he can advertise specifically for new family practice medical residents aiming to practice rural medicine, which can be challenging, he says.
Having fewer resources that are close by, intensive care units, for example, sometimes obstetrical services are not available in rural communities, and then certain procedures that might be a little bit more difficult to have access to.
Small-town doctors, knowledgeable about treating a wide array of conditions, were once common across America. And Brimberry says we have a deficit of rural practitioners in Northwest Arkansas, where unique and challenging healthcare characteristics exist in the population.
There generally are older patients with greater morbidity. There are higher rates of patients with hypertension and obesity, higher rates of smoking, lower rates of leisure activity, reduced access to primary care and specialty physicians. Oftentimes there's lower rates of health insurance coverage, higher rates of poverty, care in the rural sites where there are significant health disparities compared to a more urban environment.
Washington Regional Medical Center and Mercy Hospital are program partners. The new residents will complete their first year at Washington Regional Medical Center in Fayetteville. The second 2 years will be spent in Carroll County at Mercy Berryville Hospital, as well as two rural outpatient family medicine clinics.
Mercy-owned clinic in Berryville, and the other, which is Washington Regional Affiliated Clinic in Eureka Springs. So in their second and third year of training, these physicians will get the preponderance of their training in those rural training sites. They will have to come back occasionally and do certain rotations that they might not be able to get in the rural hospital, for example, their ICU training or their pediatric inpatient or emergency room training. But their curriculum predominantly in the second and third year will put them in the rural setting, and that's what makes this program special and helps prepare them to practice in the rural community once they're done.
And he says he hopes where they will remain as rural MDs.
If you gave in the last member drive, you already know how much your gift matters to this station. But do you know how far your donation goes? Hi, I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro from NPR. Your gift not only strengthens local journalism right in your community, it also helps fund national reporting and our journalists working all over the world. So we just wanted to say
obrigado.
Salamat po.
Kamsahamnida.
Muchísimas gracias.
Shukran jazilan.
Spasibo.
Grazie.
Arigato gozaimasu. Danyavad.
Toda raba.
Merci beaucoup.
Gerejep.
Merci ktir.
Shishe daja.
Thank you from all of us.
Thank you, everybody, who did give during last week's on-air fundraiser at 91.3 KUAF. Of course, the entire month of September is a fundraising month for us, meaning that if you didn't get to us last week, you can still contribute and be counted in this month-long fundraiser. You can do that right now at supportkuaf.com. And again, to everyone who did contribute, thank you very much. We are in the seventh month of an unfortunate trend, the advance cancellation and postponements of events a few months into the future. Even if a COVID-19 vaccine can somehow be ready for winter, many events in December and January have to be planned now, and uncertainty is still very high. So if you don't know what you can do, you have to postpone or cancel. But the city of Greenwood isn't letting the pandemic stop the annual Christmas parade there. There will be reverse Christmas parade this year, with the float stationary and the crowd driving by. Yesterday afternoon, we reached Bob Purvis, executive director of the Greenwood Chamber of Commerce. He says it's hard to imagine a December without a Christmas parade in the city.
Our Christmas parade is a huge tradition in Greenwood. It's one people look forward to all year long. It always draws out large crowds, and people are lined up elbow to elbow, three or four or five deep along the street and through the square. And looking forward, we said that type of crowd won't be acceptable regardless of where we are, and we don't see much change happening over the next couple of months. So we've got to think of something different. And I'm a granddad, and I have watched my small grandchildren in the last 6 months be told, no, you can't do that. No, we can't go there. No, that's closed. No, that's canceled. Can't have a birthday party. And I said, I don't want to see the children disappointed any more than we can help. So started trying to think, what could we do? You know, how could we do this differently? And it just occurred to me that, okay, as long as everybody stays in their vehicles, and I've seen other events where, you know, people are staying in their vehicle doing whether it's a drive-through testing or whatever it may be, how could we make that happen? And so I thought, okay, what if we just park the parade and move the people, and by doing that, move the people in their vehicles, pretty much everything would happen. And then came through my mind, okay, a big tradition at our parade is the folks on the floats and the entries throwing candy out to the kids on the sidewalk.
Right.
Well, we can't have cars driving by the parade and them throwing candy at moving cars and kids would be jumping out trying to get it. No, that won't work. I remembered a butterfly net I had bought my grandson. I thought, what if we handed them a butterfly net? They could stick it out the window. And so I went and checked with the local hardware store, and they said, yeah, we can get them. So I talked to Farmers Bank, who's our local bank, and they said, sure, we'll sponsor buying the butterfly nets. And so it just all kind of came together. The school is glad to have us line the parade up on the school grounds, which we always do. That's always where it starts. So about the only thing that's going to change is the floats won't move once they get lined up.
This is so clever. And what I love about the butterfly nets is this means every child does get candy. And maybe there's so much candy thrown every year that every child does, but this just assures that everyone gets some candy.
It will. Yes, there's always lots of candy. Matter of fact, Street Department has to sweep up candy the morning after. But it'll do two things. One, by holding that four-foot net out the window, it'll maintain that social distance that's required. We're going to put a number on the front of every car as they come through. We'll just put a sticker or something on it that says two kids, three kids, whatever, so that as people see them coming, they know how many handfuls of candy to put in the net. And it'll guarantee the safety of the kids. So we think we were kind of proud of ourselves for coming up with that one.
So many parades often have bands and other things besides floats. I know December 7th is still a ways away. Do you think there will be other, attractions besides floats?
Well, as we've talked to, the fire department always puts several fire trucks in there, and they always carry Santa. And Santa's always the last float coming through is on the big fire truck coming through at the end. So we're going to set Santa up on a fire truck, and he'll be the very last thing they see. We're certainly going to invite our bands, and hopefully our bands are able to play, and they'll just, instead of marching, they'll just stand and play. So hopefully our school bands will participate. We're hoping that everybody that normally – the only group I can see might not participate is the folks that like to ride their horses through the parade. They're welcome to, and I hope they'll bring them, but they won't be able to – because it's not going to be moving. I don't know how much the horses would like that.
Right. I thought the minute the very second I saw this idea, I thought it was a good idea. You came up with it. Was it a hard sell for anybody?
When I came up with the idea, and I went over to talk to the mayor and talked to several of the staff over at City Hall, and a couple of them looked at me like I had lost my ever-loving mind. And then the more we talked about it, the parks director put it best. She said, "That's just crazy," and in Greenwood, that's a real compliment. I think the more we talk, and there have been a few people say, "Well, why do that? Why do it?" It boils down to, it's do something different like this or not have a Christmas parade. So it's not a choice between doing this and doing our traditional parade. It's really a choice between doing this and not having a parade. And we want to have a Christmas activity, a Christmas parade for our kids.
I know that the chamber is not in charge of other things. You don't control Halloween or anything. But have there been discussions around town about what to do about some of the other traditions that autumn and winter bring?
Well, we kind of waded into it. And so our big Halloween tradition in Greenwood is a trick-or-treat trail. We have a winding hiking, walking, biking trail that comes off through the park and through town and around to the bridge and around, and it's very popular. Normally, we set up trick-or-treat on that trail, and organizations and businesses and whoever wants to sets up a little booth, and they'll be in costumes, and the kids will all come out wearing their costumes, and with their parents, they'll walk the trail carrying their buckets and get all kinds of stuff. And that works by – we use school buses – and we bus everybody to the beginning of the parade because there's more parking at the end of it. So we bus everybody at the beginning of the trail, and they walk that trail. And then when they get at the end of the trail, they're back close to where they're parked. Well, once again, we're dealing with face-to-face, person-to-person contact, crowding 30 or 40 or 50 people into the school bus. So we're breaking some of those rules again. Mm-hmm. And so what the Parks Department came up with was, rather than a trick-or-treat walking trail, they would have a trick-or-treat driving trail. So they're going to put the trick-or-treat trail through the long, it's about a mile and a half, one-way loop up and around Bell Park, which is the big park here in town, station the organizations along every, 20, 30, 50 yards, whatever, and then let the people drive through. And so we said, well, if we're going to do that, why don't we use the butterfly nets for that too? So we've gotten involved in that as well. So we'll do trick-or-treat the same way. We'll have butterfly nets holding out with the number of kids written on the car, and they'll drive through their trick-or-treat trail.
Everyone wishes 2020 was different. We didn't have to deal with what we're dealing with. But it sounds like there is a small silver lining here in the way that everyone's gotten together. The chamber, the city, your sponsor for the butterfly nets. I mean, you figured a way to do these things.
And that's kind of typical Greenwood. Greenwood's motto is Greenwood feels like home, and not unusual for a small community. We all know each other. We do things together. We squabble together pretty good, but we keep it in the family.
Right.
But we are good at doing those things. Good at just one person comes up with an idea and somebody else either laughs at them or tries to figure out a way to make it better. And So, yeah, this it's a disappointing year in all kinds of ways, but we keep looking for ways to we can make it better than it would have been if we'd done nothing, and I think that's probably the bottom line.
Well, congratulations on a clever idea, and don't take this the wrong way, but I hope this is the last annual reverse Christmas parade for Greenwood.
That is our sincere hope as well. We hope this is a one-off event.
Hey, Bob, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Hey, Kyle. Thank you for calling. Have a great day.
Bob Purvis is the executive director of the Greenwood Chamber of Commerce. He talked with us about the reverse Christmas parade yesterday. This is Ozarks at Large.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today, over the phone in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio, we're joined with Jill Dabbs, Executive Director of Downtown Springdale. Jill, very nice to speak with you.
Thank you.
You let us know about some neat things taking place in downtown Springdale, so we thought we would call, kind of catch us up on what's all going on.
The Downtown Springdale Alliance has been in place for a number of years, and our primary goal is just to develop a revitalized, vibrant downtown Springdale. I have been with downtown Springdale for about a year and a half, moved here, and have really enjoyed becoming a part of this community and this downtown.
One of them I know you wanted to talk about is an outdoor dining district. What's this all about?
The outdoor dining district is downtown Springdale's version of an entertainment district. So within the boundaries of the district, you can purchase an alcoholic beverage to go along with your food and enjoy strolling through the district, enjoy having a dinner and a beverage or lunch and a beverage in Turnbow Park, pick up a beer at Odd Soul, walk over to the Pitts Barbecue and enjoy a cold beer with your barbecue. It just allows people to move about the district, enjoy the outdoors more. It expands the restaurants and bars, dining, indoor dining areas to outdoor spaces.
And I know that's so very important for our local restaurants, local bars, because as still we can only have so many people inside the building. Just gives them a little bit more options, doesn't it?
People are so much more comfortable these days being outside.
Yeah.
It is the silver lining of this year is getting people to enjoy the outdoors more.
Jill Dabbs, Executive Director of Downtown Springdale. Okay, folks want to know a little more information about these things or just about what y'all do. What's the best way?
Our website is downtownspringdale.org. Our social media channels are populated daily on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
All right. Jill Dabbs with Downtown Springdale. Thank you so much for letting us know what's going on.
Thank you.
The Community Spotlight on KUAF. Local matters.
And thank you to everyone who also in the last 6 weeks or so has come by 9 South School in downtown Fayetteville to the Carver Center for Public Radio and dropped off pieces of PPE for area schools. You're still doing it, and we still appreciate it. The giving tree that we usually put up in Christmas is up in our lobby now. Don't worry, you don't have to come in the building. In fact, Carver Center for Public Radio remains off limits to anyone who doesn't work here full time. But we do have a bin outside that allows you to drop off PPE. We've had masks dropped off today, hand sanitizer, and much more. You can do that any time of day because of the outdoor bin at 9 South School. And thank you very much. A reminder that you can also listen to classical music at any time of the day, courtesy of 91.3 KUAF. In fact, we have a 24-hour-a-day classical music station that we call KUAF2. It's available on your HD radio in your car at home. You can also ask your smart speaker to please play KUAF2, and you can go to KUAF.com. Also at KUAF.com, you find KUAF3, which plays jazz throughout the day, and on the weekends offers encore broadcasts of our locally produced music programs, like The Vinyl Hour with Lee Wood, Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsberg, The Pick and Post with Mike Shirky, Generic Blues Show with Paul Kelso, The Jazz Scoop with Rob Wells. All of those programs can be heard a second time on the weekend at KUAF3, and throughout the rest of the week, KUAF3 provides you jazz. Again, your HD radio at KUAF or at KUAF.com, as well as your HD radio at home, in your car, or by asking your smart speaker to play KUAF3. If you want to know any more about the programs that KUAF offers throughout the week on all of our stations, you can go to our website, KUAF.com.
Now, more than ever, great public radio is at your fingertips, but What if you didn't have to lift a finger to hear the public radio you love? Now you can, with your smart speaker. Listen live or to KUAF podcast whenever you want. You can even hear our HD and online stations, KUAF 2 and KUAF 3. Staying informed is just as simple as asking your smart speaker to play KUAF.
And this is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Oaks, Oklahoma. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Thanks so much for spending part of your Tuesday with us. We will be back tomorrow at noon. We'll be back tonight at 7 with an updated edition of this version of Ozarks at Large. And then we will be back tomorrow at noon with a brand new Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. On that show tomorrow, Reflections in Black with Raven Cook and much more. Contributors to this Tuesday afternoon edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzanna Sitek, and Jacqueline Froelich. Our theme to Ozarks at Large is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl can be found most afternoons around 4 o'clock our time performing live on his Facebook and Instagram feeds. His most recent CD, by the way, titled Safe in Sound. You can find out more about Daryl also at DarylSean.com. Speaking of music, our mid-show musical performances are provided to us from our good friends at the Fayetteville Roots Festival and Red Barn Studios. Our conversations between Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, come to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. A couple of programming reminders. Governor Asa Hutchinson is scheduled to hold his weekly press briefing about Arkansas and COVID-19 this afternoon from the state capitol. Beginning in about 30 minutes at 1:30, 91.3 KUAF will provide live coverage of that press briefing. We'll also summarize it for you on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. And tonight at 8 o'clock, the first of three presidential debates between President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden takes place. That'll be from 8 until 10, live coverage from NPR on 91.3 KUAF. We will provide live coverage of all three presidential debates and the one vice presidential debate between now and Election Day on KUAF. If you ever miss an edition of Ozarks at Large or want to hear one again because you particularly liked an interview or story, we have several ways that you can be with us even if you can't hear us live at noon and 7. We do have a podcast that's available through all the major podcast distributors, including Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. You can also go to ozarksatlarge.com. There we have complete editions of former shows, but also individual stories and interviews. And with those individual stories and interviews are links that you can use to share those individual stories and interviews with friends and family. You can also ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large. The most recent full edition of Ozarks at Large will be there. And for free, all of this is for free, and for free, you can also subscribe to the Ozarks at Large newsletter. It lands in your email inbox every weekday afternoon. It includes all of the items that were on the show that day, again, with links so you can listen to them individually or the entire show if you'd like. You can subscribe to the Ozarks at Large newsletter through email for free at KUAF.com. All of the ways to listen to Ozarks at Large, free, mainly because of support from you and listeners like you. One more time, September is ending. It is our fundraising month at 91.3 KUAF, and you can always go and support us at supportkuaf.com. You pick the method and you pick the amount. Thanks to everyone who did support us last week during the on-air fundraiser and has supported us over time. All right, Here and Now is coming up next. Governor Asa Hutchinson will be with us at 1:30 for a live press briefing from the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate being able to be with you. Take care of yourself, stay well, and we'll be back tonight at 7 with an updated edition of this show and back tomorrow at noon with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.